This is Dave Hirschman. We just set the call up for recording, and everybody hopefully pressed 1. They're getting back in. I checked the numbers, and it looks like it's going back up over the 300 range, so, and people are still signing in. About every second, we're getting another registrant come on board. Want to let everybody know, not only is this call being recorded, but you can also minimize the control panel on your screen by clicking the arrow to the left of it. You can see that on the slide. Secondly, to ask a question or make a comment, you can do so in the panel on the screen. However, because we have so many people online, what I'm going to do is to ask you to wait towards the end to start submitting your questions. We already have about 10 that have been pre-submitted, and I think most of those will be covered in the substance of the webinar. But what we don't want is 10 people asking the same question, which Jim's going to already cover during the webinar. It's going to be very hard for us to scroll through them all, because we're only going to have probably about 15 minutes or so, or 20 minutes or so, to answer the questions. So hopefully we will take questions. We'll do a best job, but wait a little bit to ask them so you make sure that we don't get to your question during the webinar. I think Jim's going to do a good job of covering this topic, and we'll do it once again at the end of the webinar. Welcome to our webinar today, which is brought to you by the Certified Mortgage Advisor Program, part of Origination Pro, and it's the Federal Reserve Board's changes to Reg Z, implementing the loan officer originator or loan originator compensation rules. Our special guest presenter is Jim Milano of Wiener, Brodsky, Sidman, and Kidder. Jim, say hello to everybody again.
Hello, Dave. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. We're in good shape.
Good to be here.
I don't know if we're in good shape, but I can hear you fine. Thanks. And welcome, and thank you for taking your time today. A little bit of introduction of myself. I've been in the industry about 30 years. I started as a top producer. I've been a production executive. I'm the top author of the industry with 7 books published. I helped found the Federal Bank in Northern Virginia, and I've been a keynote speaker of hundreds of industry events, and usually I'm the one that gives the CMA webinars. But today we brought in a guest speaker, and frankly, he's much more qualified than I am as well. Our goals today, what are we going to go through? We're going to go through a legislative regulatory update. We're going to have a short intro to the Origination Pro product line. We'll be spending less than 5 minutes showing you what we have and how this fits in. I'm going to go over a quick 1 minute introduction of the Dodd-Frank law and how the origination rules sort of fit in, and then the introduction of the speaker, which is Jim, compensation, 3 rules, applicability of the rules, and the Dodd-Frank law and how the legislation might affect the compensation rules in the future. And again, as I mentioned before, we will take Q&A on this topic at the end of the webinar. Quick legislative update. I'm going to stay away from the first point, which is about compensation. I'm going to talk about FHA has eliminated the use of master appraisal reports for new home projects. FHA is in the process of extending the waiver of its anti-flipping rule for another year. Hasn't been issued yet, as far as I know. The red flags rule is effective December 31st, 2010. More information to come on that, maybe during the end. Jim can give us a little perspective on that. Reminder that a new credit score disclosure was effective first of this year, relates to how much an applicant's credit score affects their quotes and or decision on a loan. Speaking of new disclosure, the Fed has introduced an interim rule requiring new Truth in Lending mortgage program disclosures starting January 31st. We'll get more information on that as well out next week. FHA has issued an extension of temporary waiver of new condo requirements through June 30th, 2011, but it projects, they still need to be recertified if they are expiring. Deduction for mortgage insurance extension was included in the tax compromise. Fannie and Freddie are raising their premiums for low scores and secondary financing, and even though those are effective April 1st, some lenders apparently are already charging the premiums. FHA has not ruled on seller contributions as of yet. The rumor was that it would come in January. Well, there's not a whole lot of days left in January. FHA is considering changes in their MIP refund policy, and FHA has also started tracking MMLS numbers as well. I also have a slide in here, I'm not going to go over it, that gives more detail on setting up a identity theft program, which is what's required by the red flags rule. Now, a little bit about our program itself. We give this as a sort of a public service to the industry, but of course, that doesn't mean we don't have something to offer to the industry. $39 a month, we have a value package we put together, which has a free package, including the home buyer marketing kit, sales training program, and more. The Newsletter Pro marketing system, also the Certified Mortgage Advisor program. All of that is included for $39 a month. You can also add the RateLink Market Advisory Service for $59.95 a month. Training and marketing from one system, well, our goal is help you to become an expert in this industry, which this industry sorely lacks, we found out. But I've been doing this for years, and also market like an expert. One without the other is not effective. You know, I believe that quality control starts with the loan officer knowing what they need to know. Experts get referrals, salespeople deal with cold calls and have to sell. And here's the great news. Until Monday, if you're not part of the system, you can join on a trial for just $9 a month for 90 days. You'll get access to the complete newsletter system, the free package, and all Certified Mortgage Advisor webinars, including next week's webinar, which is going to be an FHA regulatory update. Obviously, we've had a lot of changes in FHA in the last 2 years. Now, Certified Mortgage Advisor Program, what is that? Well, it is a program that is comprehensive, designed to help make you a mortgage and keep you a mortgage expert in this industry. There's 9 required webinars, including a 3-part mortgage planning segment. There's a 10th webinar with at least 7 choices and an optional continuing education webinar, which we usually offer on a quarterly basis. This keeps it fresh. We can get hot topics. And just to let you know, today's webinar is one of those optional continuing education webinars. So those who are on the line that are part of our program are not getting any kind of credit for this, but this is how we keep people, we can keep new topics. And last year, it was a good faith estimate was a very hot topic. You must attend the sessions live, and it's your responsibility to attract attendance. I sent out a generic link, but you can't use that generic link if you want to be part of the program. Everybody gets a test. It's open book. And when you pass, you'll get a logo, flyers, seminars, and a code of ethics as well. And we are also applying for 8 hours continuing education credit, which will be part of the program next year. A little bit more on the RateLink service. Not going to read this slide at all, but I wanted to spend more time on the CMA program today and also on the new Newsletter Pro program as well. Okay, in keeping with being about 12 minutes together, let's get right into the webinar. I want to welcome the people that have joined us. We're now approaching 500 people, which is incredible. We usually, almost everybody who is registered is showing up. My name is Dave Hirschman. I have James Milano with me, otherwise known as Jim. And At this point, everybody is muted out. However, you can ask questions using the panel on the screen. I've got some comments on here. Okay, one says to speak louder. I think one of the problems is people are having trouble getting back into the webinar. Hopefully, Jim, can you see my slides okay?
Dave, I can see your slides and I can hear you pretty well. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, I'm getting some people saying they can see me and hear it, some people saying they're having troubles. I think, and I've gotten some more feedback, a lot of people saying they can hear me fine. So we are having a few people with technical difficulties, but, you know, I see about 20 people out of about 500 at this point. So most people seem to be doing just fine. I can hear the speaker very well, but not Dave. Well, actually, it's not as important to hear me, because right now I'm going to be giving this up to Jim in a few moments. But all I can say is keep dialing in. We probably have so many people dialing in at once that some people are getting kicked off. And I'm going to just write another note. You get kicked off of audio. Redial. We just have many people trying to get on. Okay, I'm just sending that note to all. Okay, financial services legislation signed by the president July 21st. The law incorporates several new laws, including the Mortgage Reform and Anti-Predatory Lending Act, which is Title 14 of the Act, and the Consumer Financial Protection Act, which is Title 10. It also creates the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, which is will be an independent agency under the Fed. The subtitles include Subtitle A, Residential Mortgage Loan Origination Standards, and that's where the compensation guidelines of the Act are included, or standards of the Act. Subtitle B talks about minimum standards for mortgages. Subtitle C adds a new definition and requirements for high-cost mortgages. Subtitle D adds a new Office of Housing Counseling under HUD and mandates changes to the Mortgage Information Booklet. Subtitle E affects loan servicers. Subtitle F adds new loan appraisal requirements to replace the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, and that has already been issued. Subtitle G adds enhancements to the HAMP program, Home Affordable Modification Program. Now, timing of implementation, some provisions may be immediate, but in reality, first the Bureau must be created, and then they must issue rules, and it affects more than just the mortgage business. So some of these, it may be quite a while before we see some of these things. On the other hand, other items came very quickly. For example, the elimination of the Home Valuation Code of Conduct had a timing component of 90 days. How does this fit in with the Fed compensation rules? Why did these rules come out so quickly after the signing of the Dodd-Frank Act? These are final rules that were proposed in August of 2009, and for the most part, the language is incorporated into the Act. It is assumed, and this is my assumption, that the Fed waited to issue the final rules to make sure the language in the final version of the Act did not conflict with the proposed rules. So from August to 2009 until a full year, nothing was issued on these rules until the Act was passed, but the rules were not proposed under the Act. They were proposed before the Act. The rules were effective April 1st, 2011. And those of you who don't have a calendar in front of you, that is about 60 days from now, and that's why we're doing this webinar. It's time to really get down and dirty about what's going on out there, and we need to get in more detail. And a lot of people have talked to the Fed to get more information out. We want to welcome our guest presenter officially now. It's Jim Milano. And Jim focuses on federal and state regulatory compliance matters relating to the financial services industry, particularly respect to reverse mortgage lending issues. He's co-counsel for the National Reverse Mortgage Lenders Association and is nationally recognized as one of the leading lawyers in the area's reverse mortgage law. He represents and advises mortgage companies, consumer finance companies, financial institutions, secondary market investors, and their settlement service providers, vendors on such issues as, and I'm not going to list all of them, but I am going to say his contact information is up there. And, you know, it is issues like this where if you have to come up with, for example, compensation agreements, where you should be, frankly, not talking to me, but talking to a lawyer, and talking to a lawyer who's an expert in the mortgage industry. And Jim certainly fits that bill. We really appreciate Jim taking his time today to spend with us. He's extremely busy, and we hope that he adds value to the industry. We certainly got him in front of a very wide audience today. As we said, as I said, we still got people signing in. So that being said, until the end, you won't hear from me again, hopefully, unless I need to interject something. I'm going to move it to Jim so he can move on and get us to a point where we can take questions at the end. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. And as Dave said, I want to try to run through the slides and just go over the rules as quickly as possible. And so we will have time for questions. A lot of what I'm about to go over, many or most of you have already heard, but I find it's good to go over the basic rules again, because, you know, often something may have been overlooked and it may answer questions you have. But in a nutshell, this overview here on this slide is the whole rule in a nutshell. So the rules are basically, if a consumer pays a loan originator directly, then the loan originator cannot receive compensation from anyone else. That's the first rule. The second rule is, if anyone else pays the loan originator, and we'll talk about loan originator in a moment, then no payments are allowed from the consumer, and those payments from other persons to the loan originator cannot be based on the terms or conditions of the loan, with the exception, of course, of the loan amount. And then, again, if anyone else pays the loan originator, then there can be no steering of a consumer to close a loan if the loan is not in the consumer's interest.
Hey, would you like to go to the next slide?
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right.
So what is covered? It's an application received by a creditor on or after April 1st, 2011. It doesn't matter, for instance, when a mortgage broker receives the application. The application has to be received by a creditor on or after April 1st, 2011. And this question has not been asked often. It hasn't been asked a lot yet, but I know this question is going to come up as we get closer to the date, because it was a question that was very prevalent when we had the Medea changes about 2.5 years ago. If a broker takes an application on March 30th and then sends that application and the creditor receives it on April 2nd, these new rules are going to apply. So it's the date that the creditor receives the application. Interestingly, this rule applies only to closed-in credit secured by a dwelling. It doesn't apply to HELOCs. Of course, Reg Z and Truth in Lending generally do not apply to business purpose loans. We've received some questions in the reverse mortgage space as to how this is going to work. This applies to closed-end reverse mortgages. Some reverse mortgages are structured as open-end, though it doesn't apply to those. It applies to payments to loan originators, and we'll talk about in a second how that's defined, but it doesn't apply to a lender making loans in its own name with its own funds. So there's an analogous, quote-unquote, secondary market exemption for creditors, analogous to the secondary market exemption under RESPA. There's a similar exemption under this rule. We've received a lot of questions in this area. You know, small correspondent lenders making loans in their own name with their own funds are going to be exempt from this rule at the entity level, but the rule will still apply if they're doing business with mortgage brokers or how they pay their retail loan officers. But they have to have true source of funds. And just as an aside, you know, there's long been a question under RESPA, if you have a warehouse line of credit from a commercial lender, and that commercial lender is also your investor and buys all of your loans and just so happens to buy them all on the day of closing, HUD has indicated informally it may look at the true source of funds there and might construe that relationship as a table-funded transaction, subjecting that that company to the mortgage broker compensation rules under RESPA. Well, the Federal Reserve has said for purposes of this rule, they would look to HUD's view of the secondary market exemption and true source of funds and the HUD's interpretation there to interpret what's a creditor under this rule. And the reason that's important is on November 24th of 2010, HUD issued a notice of proposed rulemaking and requested comments on issues surrounding warehousing and how that affects RESPA rules, but however they come out on those interpretations will further inform who is a creditor under this Reg Z rule and whether or not you're exempt. Next slide, please. So who is a loan originator? It's any person who for compensation or gain, Dave, if you could go to slide 18.
Okay,
yeah, here we go.
I apologize. I think I skipped. I thought I went two slides, came back.
There you are. You're perfect. So a loan originator is any person who for compensation or gain or in the expectation of compensation or gain arranges, negotiates, or obtains an extension of credit for another. But as I said, it doesn't include a creditor, the lender. It includes brokers, mortgage brokers at the entity level or their loan officers, individuals working for mortgage brokers, and it also includes retail loan officers of lenders. And that's non-bank lenders or bank lenders all the same. Next slide, please. So the rules do not apply to managers, administrative staff, and others if they do not originate loans and their compensation is not based on whether a particular loan is originated. And I'm sure we're going to have some questions in the area of branch managers, so I'll hold off on that. The rule also does not apply to servicers modifying loans. Next slide, please. What is compensation? Well, as you could well imagine, almost everything. Salaries, commission, awards, prizes, fees the loan originator retains regardless of name. Next slide. So rule number one, and we've already covered this in the overview, and we're going to go over this a couple of times, and we'll go through it quickly. But if the consumer pays the loan originator directly, then there can be no compensation paid to the loan originator from anyone else. And for all practical purposes, I'll just say as an aside in this rule, if you're a retail loan officer, you're probably not going to get paid directly from the consumer. Obviously, you'll be paid by your employer. So the practical import of this rule is that it applies to mortgage brokers primarily. If the consumer is paying the mortgage broker up front, then the mortgage broker cannot receive any back-end payment from the lender. Next slide, please.
Okay, Jim, just a quick question on this. Now, is this an individual-by-individual loan? Can a mortgage broker receive it from one consumer and then get it from lender by the next consumer?
I don't see any prohibition on that, Dave. That's a good question. So the question would be, if I'm a mortgage broker, and I send a loan application to Dave's mortgage company on Mrs. Johnson, and I say, listen, Dave, I've already collected, you know, some upfront origination fees and processing fees, and I need you to know that on the Mrs. Johnson loan. And you say, fine, so you're not going to pay me on the back end. And next week I send you a loan on Mrs. Smith, and I say, you know, I'm looking to get paid 1% of the loan amount on the back end on this one. I didn't charge any upfront fees. That, there's no prohibition against that that I'm aware of under the rule, number one. Number two, we are hearing some lenders are instituting policies and procedures to tell their mortgage broker business partners, look, you have to provide us with documentation certifying that you've either not charged any upfront fees or telling us that you have. You know, some lenders may even want to work out arrangements with their mortgage broker partners to say, look, why don't we decide that for the most part you get compensated one way or the other so that we don't slip up and pay you something on the back end when you've collected upfront fees from a consumer mortgage loan applicant. So, you know, lenders out there in the wholesale space are looking at this, and that's probably what you're going to see when you're doing business with lenders, is they're, you know, going to augment their lender broker agreements and require mortgage brokers to give more reps and warranties, number one. And number two, they'll probably require an individual disclosure or rep and warranty on each loan that if they're paying you on the back end, you did not collect anything up front.
Thank you.
Okay. So rule number one, if the consumer pays a loan originator directly, then all other persons who know or should know of consumer direct paid compensation are prohibited from paying the loan originator in connection with the transaction, number one. Number two, the loan originator cannot receive any compensation from anyone else if they're being paid by the consumer directly. The reason this slide is in here, and I wanted to highlight this, if the consumer pays the loan originator upfront directly, there's a double prohibition. No one else can pay the loan originator, number one, and number two, the loan originator cannot receive. So taking or giving on the back end is prohibited where the consumer's paid on the front end. Next slide, please. So what is direct consumer direct compensation? Cash, payment from loan proceeds at closing. What's not considered consumer direct is compensation from an increased interest rate or points or fees paid to the creditor, which are then paid to the loan originator. Next slide, please. So just to recap, you know, and again, the overview, and I'll tell everyone on the call, quite frankly, the rule is very simple. The rule in the regulation is one page. You know, what makes this rule so difficult is two things. Number one, it's a paradigm shift in loan originator compensation, and the rule, quite frankly, was designed to get at yield spread premiums. We all know that. But on its face, the rule is pretty simple. As I said, it's one page in Regulation Z. I guess what makes the rule a little bit more complicated is, again, it is a paradigm shift, and all of the creativity in the mortgage business with respect to how loan originators, retail loan officers, and mortgage brokers get compensated, and you add all the other facts in, you know, net branches, geographic differences, and all sorts of things, and the facts that we've always lived with in the mortgage business, and the fact that the rule is new and there's a lot of uncertainty as to how it's going to apply, that's where the difficulty's coming from. But part of the point that I wanted to make in this slide presentation is, at least on its face, the rule itself is fairly short and straightforward. And rule number one, the recap is, if the consumer pays the loan originator up front directly, then no one else can pay compensation to the loan originator. Next slide, please. So rule number two, if someone else pays the loan originator, then that payment cannot be based on the terms or conditions of the loan. Next slide. So what is a term or condition? Obviously interest rate or APR, the loan-to-value ratio, Prepayment penalties would be a term or condition of the loan. And in the rule, the Federal Reserve also said you cannot compensate based on a proxy for a term or condition. And they used as examples there credit scores or debt-to-income ratios. And what the Fed was concerned there is if there was different compensation based on different credit scores, they were concerned about risk-based pricing and the fact that people with lower credit scores would be, loan originators would be charging more, getting paid more to deliver higher rate loans to those people. Certainly the creditor can charge a higher interest rate. They just cannot compensate the loan originator more money for people who are getting for loans to persons with bad credit or with high debt-to-income ratios. Next slide, please.
That's an important point because it's not unusual in this industry. In the past, if you get somebody with poor credit, you spend hours and days and months fixing their credit score. In the past, you typically charge more.
Correct.
It's a really, really important point, you know, and we felt okay with that. You know, if you work harder on a loan, you should get paid more. Not necessarily that's going to be the case in the future.
Correct. And, you know, there's other ways to deal with this, but in the lender mortgage broker channel, I'm not sure the other compensation models that we'll talk about in a little bit would make a whole lot of sense. So what's allowed? And these are some of the other compensation models to dovetail right into it. A percentage of the loan amount fixed in advance, that's allowed compensation, and you can have dollar amounts, you can have floors and caps, so you could say I'll pay you 1% of the loan amount, no less than $2,000 and no more than $5,000. You can pay, you know, based on pull-through ratios. You can pay different loan originators differently. You can distinguish between your retail channel and your wholesale channel. Of course, there are fair lending issues there. You can pay based on long-term loan performance. In other words, if the loans a certain loan originator delivers, perform well, you could adjust the loan originator's compensation prospectively. There are Fair Labor Standard Act issues there for employees that you want to be aware of. You can pay loan originators based on volume, the number of loans or the dollar amount of loans delivered. Of course, for lender-paid mortgage broker compensation, there are RESPA issues there. And again, all of the compensation factors would have to be fixed in advance. So if a loan originator performs well, generally speaking, the lender would adjust their compensation going forward. So instead of 1% of the loan amount, they could go to 1.25% of the loan amount. Another way the lender could do it is to quote-unquote, lower the par rate for that mortgage broker. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But the volume issue, compensating based on volume, two points I want to make there. There are RESPA issues there, and for any of these factors where you increase compensation based on these factors, pull-through ratios, quality of loans, volume, et cetera, it's generally viewed under this rule that the adjustments in compensation would be made prospectively. So you wouldn't go back and adjust compensation or pay people more on loans that they've already delivered. Next slide, please.
Okay, you mentioned fair lending issues. Should you elaborate on that, different comp for different loan officers?
Sure. I think one area there, Dave, one example would be geographic differences. So if you had someone working outside of a major metropolitan area where home values were lower and, you know, you needed to, their percentage of loan amount needed to be a little bit higher to get their dollars up, you may be compensating someone more as a percentage of loan amount in a rural area than in a high net worth geographic area. You know, a couple of issues there. One is, you know, you have to be careful how you define your geographic areas. You know, informally, metropolitan statistical areas might be a good measure. That's one issue, that you could use to protect yourself. The other thing is that's a challenge is if, for instance, the rural loan officer, if you will, had a one-off origination in a metropolitan area, you couldn't pay that loan officer more for that one loan. They would be under their compensation plan. You know, the other thing is it could be based on performance. So the prospective revising of loan originators' compensation, you could have a loan originator with higher pull-through ratios, and in the future, you might want to increase that loan originator's compensation. But in doing so, as a lender, you would want to review the closed loans that come through that loan originator or that channel, and also look at your own pricing to assure, for those loans, to assure there's no disparate impact for the borrowers coming through that channel.
So maybe to say it in a short way, you know, you got to make sure if you're going to vary comp for different loan officers, we're not, you know, going to be second-guessed for something like redlining in an area or something like that.
Correct. And fair lending can be a bit esoteric, but it has to be taken into account as lenders and originators establish and maintain their loan originator compensation plans.
And just, and once again, rather quickly, we want to get to, you know, the questions, but I still want to make sure people understand. We also have another parenthesis, in the, which is short for the Fair Labor Standards Act. Why is long-term performance of loans bring up a labor issue?
Well, that's interesting, Dave, and I'm glad you asked that. One of my disclaimers that I wanted to give at the beginning of this presentation, and I alluded to, this is a new rule, and often new rules raise more questions than they answer, and we, as well as others, have been in constant consultation informally with staff from the Federal Reserve to get some more insight on these. And, you know, the early indication was, for instance, in a branch manager arrangement, that clawbacks would not be permissible, so that if, you know, a loan originator or a branch delivered loans that, you know, the loans didn't perform, you somehow couldn't go back and reduce the compensation of the branch manager. As recently as a couple of days ago, we're hearing different responses along those lines. There, of course, are other issues, you know, with net branches, FHA issues, if you're doing FHA loans, perhaps state law. But, you know, changing someone's compensation and how you compensate people, I mean, you have to look at the Fair Labor Standards Act and whether they're exempt or non-exempt and how those compensation packages are structured. You cannot do this with a blind eye, you know, towards those rules.
Great. And, Kay, let's continue on.
Okay.
Interrupted you enough on that one slide.
No, that's fine. More permissible compensation factors, legitimate business expenses you can pay based on an hourly rate or salary for hours work. You can pay on a differential on whether a loan originator is bringing you a new customer or they're just refinancing an existing customer. You can pay a fixed amount per loan, but again, this has to be fixed in advance, and it can't be tiered within one loan. And the Fed uses the example of $600 a loan or $1,000 a loan for the first 1,000 loans and $500 a loan for each additional loan. Interestingly, you see the compensation's going down there for more volume. It seems like it should go up, but that's the Fed's example, not mine. And then we also talked about quality of loan files, accuracy and completeness. If you have criteria for, you know, QC scoring and the loan files are better, you can increase that loan originator's compensation prospectively, but I don't think any lender is going to go back and say, you know, all of your production for the first quarter was very good. We're going to give you 25 more basis points on all of your production. I don't think that's practical from a business standpoint, and quite frankly, I don't think that that would be allowed under the rule. Next slide, please. Um, as I just alluded to, can compensation be changed? You cannot change the compensation up or down based on the terms or conditions of the loan. However, as I also alluded to, you can make periodic revisions to your compensation plans for loan originators. You can revise the compensation going forward, but you cannot do it retroactively based on the loan's terms and conditions. Next slide, please. So, again, I keep saying how simple this rule is. Just to recap the second part of the rule, if the lender's going to pay the loan originator, then those payments cannot be based on the terms or conditions of the loan except the loan amount. That's the second rule in a nutshell. Next slide. So rule number three, it's the anti-steering rule. If someone other than the consumer pays the loan originator, then there can be no steering allowed unless the loan is in the consumer's interest. Another practical implication of this is this rule, much like rule number one, has the most practical effect on mortgage brokers, because if you're a retail loan officer and you're being compensated only pursuant to the permissibilities under the rule, if you're a retail loan officer and you're not being compensated on the terms and conditions of the loan other than the loan amount, then you are deemed to have met this third rule, rule number three. You don't need the safe harbor. But if you're a mortgage broker, you cannot engage in steering. So what is steering? Advising, counseling, or otherwise influencing a consumer. What is the consumer's interest? You have to compare transactions to other loans available through the loan originator. For instance, a higher rate loan that has no prepayment penalty or a lower cost loan. One thing I want to say about steering is steering doesn't occur unless the consumer actually obtains a loan. Next slide, please. So as I said in the beginning, it's not applicable to creditors, lenders, employees, retail loan officers if those loan officers comply with the prohibition or don't violate the prohibition on being compensated based on loan terms. And also, this does not apply to consumer direct payments to loan originators. Again, that would be occurring most likely in mortgage broker situations where a consumer pays a mortgage broker an application fee, a processing fee, or upfront origination fees. This anti-steering does not apply to consumer-paid items. We'll get to the Dodd-Frank Act a little later. The Dodd-Frank Act changes that. The last one is the exception to the anti-steering is there's a safe harbor rule. So you've got a couple of exceptions to the anti-steering rule, and here they are. So you can presume compliance with the anti-steering prohibition if the loan originator obtains loan options from a significant number of creditors with which the loan originator regularly does business. That's the first thing. And the loan originator then either sends the consumer to the loan with the least amount of creditor-paid compensation, or the loan originator presents the consumer with options satisfying three criteria for each type of transaction that the consumer expressed an interest in. And in the rule, they say types of transactions are fixed rate, adjustable rate, or reverse mortgages. Those are loan types. So the first thing you need to do is do business with a significant number of creditors. If you meet that criteria, then you either need to send the consumer to the lowest cost loan or present them with three options. Next slide, please.
Can you perhaps see that there will be some sort of disclosure that a broker might come up with that shows that they presented them with three options?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we're already seeing that, and we're already hearing questions around that. I think some sort of comparison worksheet that shows, for instance, you know, three different types of ARM loans, with one with no points, you know, one with no prepayment penalty, assuming that's allowed in your state, And, you know, for each, or if the consumer expressed an interest in a fixed rate loan, showing a no-cost loan, showing the next loan with sort of the lowest possible interest rate, perhaps with some points involved, and then another loan with no quote-unquote risky features. This is in the next slide. Thank you for the question. So the criteria are a loan with the lowest rate for the loan type, a loan with the lowest rate with no risky features, that's negative amortization, prepayment penalty, interest only, balloon loans within 7 years, or demand features, or for reverse mortgages, shared appreciation or equity appreciation. And the third option would be the lowest total dollar amount for origination points and fees and discount points. So those are the options that you would have to show the consumer to meet that second criteria under the safe harbor for each loan type that the consumer expressed an interest in. So what's not required? First of all, you're not required to meet the safe harbor. It's just a presumption. If you meet it, then there's a presumption that you didn't steer. If you don't meet the safe harbor, it doesn't mean you steered a consumer. It just means that you don't qualify for the presumption, and someone could come in and make the allegation. You could still prove you didn't steer. The other thing is, you know, some brokers do business with one lender or two lenders. You know, a significant number of creditors. In the preamble to the rule, the Fed indicated that three or more creditors would be a significant number of relationships. But if you're only doing business with two lenders now, you don't have to go out and establish new relationships if you're a mortgage broker. And also, you don't have to inform the consumer of options for transactions for which the consumer likely does not qualify. Next slide, please. So a recap of the third rule. And we're almost done with the Federal Reserve's Reg Z loan originator compensation rule. If someone else other than the consumer pays the loan originator, you cannot steer, but there are safe harbors that apply to the anti-steering rule, and we just went over those. So that's rule number three in a nutshell. Next slide. So there are penalties for violating TILA. Interestingly, as an aside, I'll just note right now, under the rule, that's it comes into effect on April 1st, technically, a creditor is not liable for a broker's violation of the rule. That's going to change under Dodd-Frank, and there are impermissible activities for mortgage originators under Dodd-Frank that could give that borrower a defense in recoupment against collection of against the creditor trying to collect that loan. So you're going to see, you know, a lot of compliance put around this rule in the future. But there are penalties for lenders under Truth in Lending for violating this rule, and those are outlined in this slide. Next slide, please. So, again, this is Reg Z. We've been talking about Reg Z all along, and as Dave said, the rule was proposed in August of 2009, the industry commented by December of 2009, and the Fed waited and came out with the final rule in pre-published form in August of 2010 and published the final rule in September 2010. This rule is effective for applications received by creditors on or after April 1st, 2011. The three rules are: if the consumer pays the loan originator upfront directly, then no one else can pay the loan originator. That's rule number one. Rule number two, if the lender, in our case, the mortgage lender is paying the mortgage broker on the back end and the mortgage broker is not being paid on the front end, then those payments cannot be based on the terms or conditions of the loan, such as the interest rate. But, of course, one exception is the loan amount. And then rule number three, if the lender's paying, for instance, the mortgage broker on the back end, there can be no steering of the consumer to close a loan where the loan originator gets paid more and that loan's not in the consumer's interest. But, of course, we went over the safe harbors. There are ways to comply with the anti-steering rule by meeting the safe harbors. So that's the rule in a nutshell. And that's what everybody is dealing with. in with this rule coming down the pike on April the 1st.
So, Jim, I put down four examples of applicability of this rule, and probably can add a few more. First, we got a loan officer who is a broker compensated by a wholesaler. Now, there's nothing in the rule that I know of that says YSP is dead. YSP, as far as I can tell, can be used to pay closing costs.
Correct. That is correct. You can use yield spread premiums to pay closing costs, but you do need to be careful with that. None of that money can go to the loan originator. It has to go to pay closing costs. If there's a de minimis amount left over and the loan originator receives that, that may be okay, but if there's a constant pattern of the loan originator receiving substantially, beyond de minimis amounts of money on a series of transactions, that's going to be problematic. So consumers can use the increased rate to help pay for closing costs, but technically the loan originator, in this case, in my example, the mortgage broker, is not supposed to receive any of that yield spread premium. De minimis amounts are okay, but mortgage brokers and lenders obviously will police this, need to be careful with that.
Well, you know, Jim, and of course, I'm probably questioning the wrong person because you're not the Fed, but isn't a loan officer's commission part of closing costs?
Well, the loan originator, a mortgage broker, correct, would be part of the closing cost. But, again, the rule does not allow compensating a loan originator based on the terms and conditions of the loan. And a term and condition is the interest rate. So if the interest rate is increased and the, that increase, the loan originator is making more money because of, and it's coming from that increased rate or that yield spread, that would be in direct contravention of the rule.
Well, but hang on for a second. Let me see if I can clarify this a bit. Let's just say the loan officer charges 1% of the loan amount, or broker.
Correct.
Broker charges 1% of the loan amount, or the loan officer's paid 1% of the loan amount. And I'm only picking an even number. Let's say, the consumer picks a 5% interest rate, which has 3% yield spread. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
5% interest rate, 3% yield spread. Let's say total closing costs, including what is paid to the broker or the loan officer, is, let's say, 3%.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, in effect, are we paying, using YSP to pay for the broker's or loan officer's commission? In essence, I don't know how you separate the fee from the loan officer is part of the closing costs.
Well, I think one thing you need to distinguish, first of all, is who's paying the loan originator, in this case, the mortgage broker. Is the consumer contracting with the mortgage broker to pay them up front? I mean, if that's the case, the lender cannot pay the broker on the back end. But if the lender is going to pay the broker on the back end, they cannot increase the broker's compensation on a loan-by-loan basis based on the interest rate. I mean, that's what the rule is designed to combat. The lender certainly could pay the broker 1% of the loan amount, but in that case, Dave, that's technically not closing cost. If the lender's paying the broker on the back end, that's not going to be a quote-unquote closing cost, like a title insurance premium or an appraisal fee or that type of thing, that the borrower has contracted to pay up front.
So,
maybe I'm not understanding your question.
Yeah, well, and let's just say, okay, the lender pays the 1%, so basically then the lender comes out with a rate sheet that builds in the 1% they've got to pay for the loan officer.
And that's what they're going to do. There's no doubt that that's what they're going to do. And the interesting thing, and part of the mortgage broker's complaint is lenders can change their rate sheets all day long. They just cannot change with, you know, frequency, with unreasonable frequency, their loan originator compensation plans. Rate sheets, consumer-facing rate sheets from lenders will continue to change on a daily basis.
Well, and just this is just in my mind. If indeed the person can receive YSP, which he can use to pay for closing costs, and indeed if the lender is paying the broker or lender's paying the loan officer, either one, a fee, which of course is going to be built into the cost, in essence, yield spread premium is going to have to be made more transparent, but it's still part of the equation.
Well, the thing you have to remember, though, again, is the compensation to the loan originator has to be set up front and cannot be changed on a loan-by-loan basis based on loans, terms, and conditions. So with that rule in place, you're not going to create any extra compensation to the loan originator through yield spread. I don't know if that answers your question.
We're talking about somebody who's paid 1% on every loan. So it's not going to change. Not going to change. And,
right.
You know, and as long as it doesn't change, you know, it becomes part of the equation. Okay, let's go to situation two. Let's talk about the owner of a mortgage brokerage company. And there's two situations here, or two or three situations. You know, an owner who has loan officers working for them, or an owner who doesn't have loan officers working for them. How can the owner of, you know, basically can an owner of a mortgage brokerage company be paid on the profits of that company?
I would say generally yes. I mean, there's two things you have to remember. Obviously, the owner of the brokerage company is going to make money off of, you know, the profits of the company. But a couple of things you need to remember. The mortgage brokerage company itself is a loan originator as defined under the rule. So that mortgage brokerage company would be subject to the rule, and if they're being paid on the back end by the lender, their compensation on a loan-by-loan basis will not be able to vary based on, for instance, interest rate. But the overall net profits of the company obviously are going to inure to the benefit or detriment of the owner of the company. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if the owner of the mortgage brokerage company is himself or herself a licensed loan originator and they originate loans, the compensation that they receive for originating loans from their mortgage brokerage employer will also be subject to the rule. So nothing disallows an owner of a mortgage brokerage company from, taking a profit from loans. And, in fact, we've talked to some mortgage broker companies, and, you know, I'll just use some numbers as an example. The mortgage broker company is receiving 1% of the loan amount of the loans it's delivering to the lender, and they're going to pay their loan officers that work for the mortgage broker company 50 basis points of each loan that closes that they get paid on. And obviously the owner of the company, regardless of whether he or she is a mortgage originator or not, will receive, you know, the net profits of that company, which will be constructed from the 50 basis points remaining less expenses.
Okay, I think I understand that pretty well. It's a good example. Situation three is a producing or a non-producing manager of a lender. How can they be compensated? So you were talking about a producing manager or non-producing manager.
You know, we've received different ideas and feedback on this, and let's talk about a producing manager first. So you have a producing branch manager that originates loans, but also has is running the branch and is paid on the quote unquote net profits of the branch. Informally, it's been indicated to us that you couldn't segregate that person's compensation between, that's the most recent answer. We've gotten different answers on that. But the most recent answer as of about a week ago was you couldn't pay them on their own production and then give them an override on the rest of the branch. Their compensation could not be segregated. That would be a producing branch manager. For a non-producing branch manager, again, there are other issues at play. I think that people have to be careful. For instance, if a branch is going to be paid more, one hypothetical we came across was, you have a lender that has a net branch, and the lender is FHA approved and making FHA loans, and for whatever reason, they're getting very favorable execution. They're putting all their FHA loans in Ginnie Mae pools, and they're getting very favorable execution on FHA loans, but for whatever reason, the interest rate on those FHA loans are higher because perhaps they're dealing with first-time home buyers or borrowers with less pristine credit. So the home office tells the branch, look, tell your loan officers to, pump up the volume, if you will, on FHA loans, and that's going to increase your bottom line. I think there, you may have to take into consideration fair lending issues. I don't know that, the anti-steering would come into play as long as, folks are not being compensated based on impermissible terms. But that calls into question, if all the interest rates on this particular branch are coming out higher and that branch is being compensated more, I mean, it's a stretch, but you have to be careful there that, someone is not being compensated more based on impermissible terms and conditions. You just want to be careful that you don't convert an otherwise quote-unquote loan originator who would not be subject to the rule, that you convert their activity into something where they're perhaps now being compensated on the terms and conditions of the loan and they don't qualify for the safe harbor. Okay. So
is the most onerous thing is if you have a producing branch manager, you can't pay him to produce plus pay him overrides on the rest of the branch. That seems...
And we had different views of that, Dave, when the rule initially came out. We thought that, the rule does say with respect to a particular transaction, so it should be loan by loan, and a producing branch manager should be able to be compensated on what he produces and then have a separate compensation plan for the branch. We're just hearing different things, from the regulators on this informally.
That just seems, that's contrary to how the business is right now, because that probably covers about 90% of the producing branch managers. Quick question on seller contributions. If the seller pays for closing costs, does that affect this in any way?
I think that's a good question, Dave. I think that care is warranted on this question. I think people need to be careful with this one. And really, it comes down to, this is why we went over the rule. And the first part of the rule is if the consumer pays the broker, then no one else can pay the broker. So you have to ask yourself, what is the seller contributing towards? Are they contributing towards upfront fees that the consumer has agreed to pay the mortgage broker? You really have to look at that question. Because if that's the case, then in this transaction, theoretically and perhaps practically, that it will be deemed that the consumer has agreed to pay the broker upfront, and the seller's paying that on behalf of the broker. And what does that do? I think that it would be fine for the seller to contribute and pay upfront, consumer-committed upfront mortgage broker fees. But once you say you're doing that, what's the practical effect of that? Go back to rule number one. If the consumer pays the loan originator upfront, no one can pay the loan originator on the back end. So my view of seller contributions would be be careful. Document it. And specify what you're paying. If the seller pays for title fees and other closing costs, but not mortgage broker fees, then maybe the lender can pay the mortgage broker on the back end. But if you're not careful and you don't document it, and the consumer's obligated to pay the mortgage broker up front, you know, mortgage broker application processing or origination fees, and what the seller is contributing goes towards that, then basically what you've said is the consumer has agreed to pay the mortgage broker up front. And that means that the lender can't pay the mortgage broker on the back end. So in purchase money transactions where you have seller contributions, but the broker wants to be paid on the back end by the lender, or the lender wants to pay the broker on the back end, be careful about how you denominate and use seller contributions. That would be my thought there.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on. Dodd-Bank Loan Officer Comp Rule coming soon. Okay, now we're talking about the compensation provisions of the Dodd-Frank Act.
Well, yeah, and let's just go through this briefly. And Dave, you raised this at the beginning. The Dodd-Frank Act was signed into law by President Obama on July 21st, 2010. There were 16 titles in the law. One title is Title 14, the Mortgage Reform and Anti-Predatory Lending Act, which makes numerous significant amendments to the Truth in Lending Act, including provisions on mortgage originator compensation. It's called something different under the law, the statute, mortgage originator compensation. Under the Dodd-Frank Act, a couple of other things are going on. They create the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, and the statute says that the changes, these changes under the Mortgage Reform Act to the Truth in Lending Act, will become effective when regulations are finalized. And the Dodd-Frank Act says that the Bureau has to issue in proposed form no later than 18 months after the designated transfer date proposed rules on these mortgage originator rules changes under the Truth in Lending statute, and a host of, and a number of other things. The designated transfer date is July 21st, 2011. So within 18 months after that date, which could be as late as December or of 2013 or January of 2014, the Bureau is going to have to propose rules to implement. It could be sooner than that, but it could be as late as the end of 2013. The other thing the Dodd-Frank Act says is that once the Bureau proposes rules to implement these changed statutory provisions, those proposals have to be effective within 12 months of the final of the finalization of the proposed rules. So this could be a ways out that we have proposed rules. I mean, theoretically, it could proposed rules could come out as early as July 2011, this year. I doubt it will be that quickly. It may not be by the end of this year. It may be sometime in 2012. Once those rules are proposed, they'll have to put them out for comment, they'll have to receive comments, and they'll have to finalize the rules, and once the rules are finalized, they have to. There's an effective date of 12 months after that. So we could be looking as late 2014, maybe even early 2015. The earliest that these rules could possibly come out as final rules would be July of 2013, but I don't think it's going to be that effective. So we have some time. That's the first thing I wanted to say. But the mortgage originator rules in the Dodd-Frank Act are similar to the Federal Reserve Board's loan originator compensation rules that we just went over in detail, but there are differences. And the first difference is they use the term mortgage originator, and that's defined more broadly than a loan originator under the rule. There are additional prohibitions on mortgage originator compensation. One of the things is the compensation being based on the loan amount applies to mortgage originator compensation from any source. So if the borrower pays the mortgage originator directly, in this case a mortgage broker, that compensation is not going to be able to be based on the terms and conditions of the loan, with the possible exception of the loan amount. the rule that the mortgage originator can be compensated from the creditor or the consumer, but not both, that's also in the statute. And pursuant to our discussion on yield spread premiums are going to be across the board prohibited for loan originator compensation. There'll be no question about that under the statute, unlike the exception that we talked about under the rule where yield spreads could be used to pay closing costs. That will be flatly prohibited. None of that, and even in a de minimis amount, will be able to come back to the loan originator. Again, some of the things in the rule that are similar, mortgage originator compensation based on volume will be allowed, you know, during set periods. I'm sorry, I lost my...
Did I move too quickly?
No, I just... my computer shut down here. Let me just get back up.
Okay, well, I've got the slides here. It says allowed mortgage originator compensation. Mortgage originator compensation based upon volume of loans set during a set period. Discount points to lower the rate. Can finance points. And then secondary market transactions not covered.
Yeah, that's very similar to the rule, much like the regulation that we just discussed. There is a creditor exemption in the statute also.
Okay, and also another, continuing with the rule, no steering applies to both the mortgage originator and the creditor and cannot steer from a qualified loan, and a qualified loan that is something that's defined in the Act. And we're not going to get into that today, to a loan that the consumer lacks the ability to repay, or a predatory loan, which thus far has been undefined, but I assume would be defined in the regulations.
Correct. I think that they're going to, the Bureau will undertake to define not only what are predatory loans, but abusive lending practices.
Then you have a slide that covers the major differences, that there's a broader definition of mortgage originator. I don't know that we need to go into details on this because, as you say, it could be a ways out, but you should be aware that it is very well could be coming, that if a non-consumer pays the mortgage loan officer no consumer direct payment and no consumer payments unless, on discount points, origination fees, and so forth, unless the agency waives the rule.
That's an important one, and basically what that's going to say is if the lender is charging points to the consumer, then there can be no back-end payments from the creditor to the broker. That's a very interesting concept, so we're hoping the Bureau will create an exception to that. You know, what that's basically going to require, if that rule goes through, is any loan where there's back-end compensation will have to be more or less a no-cost loan. There'll be no upfront mortgage broker fees, and there'll be no lender points. So that's a very interesting statutory provision that we're watching very closely.
Which could hurt the consumer, of course, which, you know, makes no sense. But
yeah,
it doesn't always make sense. Steering prohibitions broader and apply to creditors and no safe harbor. Loan term condition is prohibition is broader. Applies even if the consumer pays directly. You already mentioned that. There's increased penalties. Mortgage loan officer liability. That says longer S/L and state attorney generals. So you'll have to explain those last two.
Statute of limitations is longer. They've increased the statute of limitations, and there are provisions under the Dodd-Frank Act that amend Truth in Lending that give states' attorneys general more power to come after creditors.
Okay. And last, the Dodd-Frank Act rule, the comp summary, coming soon but not yet, more restrictive, and it's going to mean a second round of changes. So while we're going through this, guys, and you're seeing, you know, what's going here. As Jim mentioned at the beginning, we're changing a whole paradigm here. Everything from how loan officers to managers get paid, and yet this is only the first wave. Now, hopefully, we'll get our act together under these rules by the time the Consumer Financial Protection Act comes out with their rules, and perhaps we can make them coincide a little bit more by the time that happens. But, that's in a perfect world, of course. And I'm going to hurry things along here because what we want to do is to get to questions. And I've got a couple of slides on the Newsletter Pro system. For the new people, I wanted to show you what the dashboard looks like, only because that's where you get the slide and recording for the next 2 weeks if you're part of the system. If you're not part of the system, you'll get an email to you. And I'm just racing through these slides. It gives you pictures of some of the newsletters and so forth, but we really don't have time today, and I don't want to take any time from Jim. I also want to remind people of the $9 trial, but I'll remind everybody in the follow-up to the webinar, so I don't need to spend any time on it again. Now, we got questions. We officially have about 15 minutes for questions. If Jim could stay longer, of course, I'm sure we could use him. But, Jim, I'm going to ask for your help. I know you're an attorney. We have so many questions. Literally, we're going to have to keep this as much as possible to short answer. So I know that's difficult, and I know you want to show lots of perspective, but I want to get through as many as we can. And I've got the pre-written questions here. What are the chances this will be delayed?
We've been asked that question a lot. I don't think that the rule is going to be delayed. I'll just say that. I think you better get ready to comply. If you haven't started, you should start now. Be looking at your compensation plans, talking to your wholesalers. I don't think this rule is going to be delayed.
Okay, good point. Here's the question. All right. The company has a compensation agreement with the mortgage loan officer that they'll be paid amount based upon whatever is agreed upon. But the loan closes without making enough compensation to meet the agreement. If the company doesn't pay the loan officer, and this goes into the issue of underages, if the loan officer does not get paid as much as they're supposed to get paid, is that a violation of the law?
I think so. I think that's a problem, and I think what's happening with this rule, because of that, creditors we're seeing in crafting their plans are being cautious in how much they're going to pay, and it's causing them to, as I said, you could pay a percentage of the loan amount, you could put in dollar floors and dollar caps. I think, the caps that they're putting in are lower than they normally would be in order to protect themselves from secondary price movements where they don't have enough money to pay their loan originators. The other thing it may cause creditors to do is change your compensation packages prospectively, to take into account secondary market price fluctuations.
Okay, good point there. And I think the other thing that at least some companies have the option of doing, which again is going to hurt the consumer, and you would think the Fed would think of these, is companies are going to pack their price so that if the loan officer has to take an underage, the company's still going to make their profit. And that's an unfortunate thing, but that is there. This is sort of more of a Fair Labor Standards question. How can a loan officer get overtime if they're on commission?
That's going to depend on whether they're treated as exempt or non-exempt. There are developments in the Fair Labor Standards Act area as we speak. The Department of Labor sort of changed their view as to, whether loan officers generically or generally are exempt or non-exempt. That is something that lenders are going to have to look at. If their loan officers are non-exempt, they're going to have to take into account their compensation plan that those people work more than the standard hours per week. So they're going to have to take that into account in their compensation plan. So you can pay a percentage of the loan amount, and then you can have maximum and minimums. But on the maximum side, You know, if their loan officers are working overtime, they're going to have to take that into account and add salary to their compensation plans. That is a very vexing point for retail lenders out there today dealing with their loan officers. And quite frankly, as you may have heard, the MBA has filed suit against the Department of Labor to try and get them to get better focus on that rule.
Okay. What about, Jim, what about point banks where a loan officer is not paid more, but if he collects more than the posted price, it may give them the ability to maybe later on, or maybe not direct loan by loan, gives them more, the lender gives them more pricing discretion than another loan officer, but would not affect their pay in any way?
I think, you know, generally speaking, point banks are fine. There's a lot of detail. The devil is in the details there for the lender as to how they structure that. But generally speaking, you know, point banks, as we understand them, that's would be permissible. There's some structuring that has to take place there.
Okay, that's a good point. You know, being a veteran in the industry 30 years, you know, 25 years ago, that's what a lot of banks did. They had point banks, and they would not pay loan officers overage because they were scared of overage.
Again, you know, the rule allows you to set compensation in advance. So, you know, as long as you do it that way and it's properly structured, I mean, you can pay volume as long as it's set up in advance.
Okay, this is from Tracy. I'm done with the pre-submitted questions, and I'm going to put you on the spot really here, Jim. How much does Attorney Milano charge to review a loan office comp agreement?
That depends. That's a good question. You know, it depends on how complicated it is, whether you want us to just look at, you know, retail loan officers, if you're looking at your wholesale channel, if you had net branch arrangements, if you want us to get into the labor issues, you know, the FSLA issues that we've talked about. So, you know, it really depends. You know, on the low end, it's four figures, but, you know, if you want all the bells and whistles, we could certainly get into five figures.
Okay, thank you. And, if, you know, I wasn't expecting you to throw out a number, but, you know, it does give people the understanding that you do that for a living and you can do that, and I think that's important. And I just put myself on set because the next question I came to, I swear I didn't make this up, does a set of slides and audio recording of this webinar cost anything? If so, how much? And I want to make this clear. We're doing, you know, we want to promote ourselves, but we're not charging for this webinar, and we're not going to be charging for the slides and the audio. We're going to be sending it out for free. I've got a slide up there for you can see right now that tells you what I'd like you to do, but that's it, guys. You know, that's it. Okay, this is going to be a little bit more difficult. I'm going to be reading these as I go. I couldn't pre-prepare these. If you collect a 1% origination fee on loans from a borrower, is this considered that the consumer is paying direct? And I'll just throw in myself. Of course, it depends upon if you're collecting it directly from the consumer, and only a broker can do that, an originator with the lender can't do that. I guess the answer would be yes, correct, Jim?
Correct.
Okay. And if I could do these by short answer, I will. Can the originator credit the back-end compensation to the borrower? It's an interesting question.
Generally, no. Unfortunately, this rule is going to impact not only overages but underages. And if I understand the question correctly, the loan originator's compensation cannot change based on the terms and conditions. That means up or down.
Yeah, let me clarify a little bit on this. If you basically took, you know, what's being credited back to you, let's say you're a broker, and you paid back to the customer, in essence, that's not a charge anymore. That's a credit. You know, it would affect their closing costs. It becomes more of a complex issue. any upfront fee such as a processing fee or only a mortgage broker. So let's say a broker charges a processing fee. Let's say that fee goes to a third-party processing company. It's a pass-through. Is that considered upfront compensation to a broker?
That's actually a good question. I would have to look at that. I think that we addressed that question. I want to say no, but let me double-check that one, Dave, and I'll get back to you.
Okay, that would be great if you could note that. And I think it's clear if a broker charges a processing fee, but it's not a third-party pass-through, it would be considered upfront. If you've charged that, you can't collect money from the lender. I think that's
clear. I would agree with that, and that's another area where you want to be careful how you document it.
Right. Okay. Once again, I'm scrolling through these. I got another processing question, but I think it's pretty similar to that one. If a borrower... No. What if about if a client does not want escrows? Is that a term of the loan?
It's not listed as one. That's a good question. I mean, the terms of the loan that they talk about are, you know, interest rate, DTI, prepayment penalty, LTV ratio.
It's not listed, but let me say this. If you weren't on the line, Jim, here's what I would say. I would presume that somebody could not make more by collecting an escrow. So... you know, you're really not going to be able to make more because you added an escrow or took away an escrow. And I'm just making that assumption. If I'm wrong, Jim, we may not know that yet, but that's the assumption I would go advise somebody to go by.
Well, that's certainly the safer approach, Dave. I would agree with that.
Does this conflict with the agency price sets? And the answer is no. You're not making any more. You can't make any more if the if the borrower pays the price in, it's like paying a higher interest rate. As long as the loan officer doesn't make more because the credit is low, there's no conflict at all. Is that correct?
Correct.
I think what we all want to know is what the 3% cap will mean to us originators come 4/1/11. How is our compensation going to be controlled as bankers or broker? We didn't really bring up the 3% cap, but I think this is the appropriate time to do it.
Yeah, we hear a lot of questions on that, Dave, and I get confused by this question. I think what people are talking about is under the Dodd-Frank Act and the amendment to the Truth in Lending Act under the Mortgage Reform Act, there's this definition of qualified mortgages, and there's 12 things you have to meet, and one of them is the points and fees cannot be higher than 3%. Not only is that a Dodd-Frank rule, but that is for qualified mortgages. It's not in directly in the mortgage originator compensation rule. So a couple of things there. First, it's in Dodd-Frank. It's not in the Federal Reserve Board's Regulation Z loan originator compensation rule, number one. Number two, even within Dodd-Frank, it's not in the mortgage originator piece. It's in the definition of qualified mortgage. So there, what will happen, it's not a limit on compensation. It's just if you go over that amount, you will not have a qualified mortgage, and then ability to repay requirements will apply, and you'll also have to look at the Title IX, which we didn't talk about, risk retention and securitization rules, because they have to come up with a definition of qualified mortgage that is no less onerous than the definition under the Mortgage Reform Act, and if you fail the definition of qualified mortgage, there'll be risk retention rules on those mortgages if you go to securitize them, unless they're FHA insured. So effectively what that's going to do is it will limit pricing, but it's not directly a loan originator compensation or even a mortgage originator compensation rule. It comes out of the definition of qualified mortgage in Dodd-Frank.
Okay, So number one, and once again, keep, you know, to be sure with it, number one, it has nothing to do with this rule. Number two, when it does come into effect, the only way it could affect compensation is indirectly. I mean, for example, you can't pay a loan officer 3% and collect closing costs because you're going to violate the rule. Now, you don't have to get a qualified loan, but keep in mind, most banks are going to want to originate qualified loans because of the secondary market and so forth. So anyway, here's another question. Can similarly situated loan officers be paid differently?
Well, you say similarly situated. I mean, I would say yes. I think that, you know, loan officers, retail loan officers of lenders will be paid differently, probably based on performance, you know, pull-through ratio, quality of loans, that type of thing. If they are doing the exact same thing, I don't know how you justify the difference in compensation. So, you know, it really depends when you say similarly situated.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things that could be different. What if the experience level is different? What if the loan officer happens to be a higher producer in general? I mean, the rule says you can compensate them differently as long as it's not based upon the terms of loans. So,
correct.
This is just, you know, the borrower pays the loan officer, then the payment can be based upon the terms of the loan. That is correct. Now, keep in mind, the Dodd-Frank Act may change that when it's ineffective. But if the borrower pays the loan officer correctly, then there's an exemption on being paid on the terms of the loan, correct?
Please. Correct.
Yeah. Correct, Jim?
Dave, I'm getting paged to my next call. I'm going to have to drop off.
Okay, then, guys, you're going to have to hear non-legal answers to the rest of the questions, or as many as I can get through. So, Jim, I really appreciate it very much. You know, you went again above and beyond. I'd like to emphasize that I will have Jim's contact information in the follow-up email to this webinar. And, you know, again, just thank you very much, Jim.
You're welcome, Dave, and I look forward to following up with you, and I hope everyone enjoyed the call and found it helpful and informative today. Everyone take care and stay warm and safe out there.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
All righty, bye-bye.
Okay, I'm going to spend about another 5 minutes just reading questions, and if I don't know the answer, I'm not going to answer it. But, you know, most of them, I think, are fairly evident. And we just got so many questions. On rule one, since I work for a company broker and never get paid directly from the consumer technically pays my employer, will one never apply to me, correct? It would apply for you. Basically, you can't get paid on the terms of the loan. It would never apply to you that you would get paid directly. You would never have that exemption. But as far as the rule, it would apply to you. You're using loan officer and loan originator interchangeably. Yeah, don't read into that. I just use it, you know, we just use it at different times. Can you compensate a loan officer differently on loans they originate versus leads that are given to them? That's a good point. I wish I had gotten to that before Jim went there. I'm not so sure that I'm going to write that down to send to Jim. I think that's a great question. Not the other ones are bad, but I think, you know, if you can only pay a loan officer one way, it sounds like you're not going to be able to do it differently. Can you pay an LO differently on leads? And you may have to have a loan officer take, you know, you can have pay two different loan officers differently, one who originates on referral and one who originates through leads. The question is if you can pay a loan officer differently. My initial answer to that is no, but I'd like to get that answered by Jim. And, you know, it's a great question. I think it's from Alicia. if a borrower paid situation, if the borrower pays the broker business, pays the broker business, say, which would be considered exempt from the rule, will broker's loan officer also be exempt in that transaction? Would they be subject to the rule since they never received the compensation directly? Also a great question. What if the broker, but not LO, is paid directly? I'll get that answer out to everybody as well. Is LO exempt? You know, I know a lot of people are somewhat salivating, not salivating, but anticipating they want to collect directly so they can do it. My own point is, number one, that may go away under the Dodd-Frank Act, and number two, it's going to be very hard, again, to administer when somebody pays directly and when somebody pays from the lender. The lenders are not going to want, wholesalers are not going to want to be, you know, put in a position of not, of being to administer it. So I wouldn't plan on spending a lot of time, you know, plan on a lot of direct compensation from, you know, from borrowers unless you do it that way all the time. And I think that's more of an administrative situation. Can a loan officer be paid on a straight salary? As far as I know, the answer to that would be absolutely yes. Be absolutely yes. Could you give an example of the percentage of loan and what would the caps be tied to? Good question on that. As far as I know, there are no caps. Let me put a caveat on that. The lender may invoke caps, or the state may invoke caps, but there's nothing in this rule that is putting maximum caps on the income on a loan, or that you pay a loan officer on a loan officer. What is the definition of periodic? Another good question, and I got to tell you, as far as I know at this point, it has not been defined, but certainly I don't think necessarily you're going to be able to change it monthly. Remember, you can't change it in arrears. You have to change it going forward. You can't say, well, you had a good month, I'm going to pay you a bonus now. You have to say you had a good month, you know, you had a good quarter, we're going to put you on this new comp plan for higher producers. I would feel safe, I think, safer with quarterly than I would with monthly on it. But once again, we haven't seen a lot of this stuff in writing. Okay, I'm going to take three more, and that's about it. And like I said, I may not get them all, and I apologize for that, but we've had so many of them. If you are a direct lender in compliance with Rule 2, it is automatically assumed that we're in compliance with Rule 3. Do we have to show the three options? I believe the exemption says if you do comply, if you're a lender and do comply, then, you know, where the loan officers can't make any more money, I believe you don't have to show those options. You don't have to show the three options. But, of course, it doesn't hurt. You got a good faith estimate where you can show options on there. And I actually counsel loan officers to do that even before this. Okay, here's a good question for Jim, and obviously he'd have to answer this one. I'm going to write it down. Is Jim willing to file an injunction in court to stop the regulation from taking effect? Jim would have to answer that, but Jim would not do it on his own. If you paid Jim as a client, you know, and you were a client of his who wanted to do that, you know, I'm sure he would consider it, but I'm not sure if there would be a conflict of interest. Not always can, you know, we're talking about the government here, not always can every lawyer take every case, and I'd have to leave him to take that case. If terms and conditions are identical between several wholesalers, why would we have to steer them to the lowest compensation to us if there's no bearing on the borrower's terms and conditions? Once again, you don't have to do that if you gave them three options. So if the terms and conditions are the same, you show them three lenders, and basically you get paid more by one of them, and it goes to that person, and the terms and conditions are the same. You know, it looks to me at least that you would meet the exemption. It was an either or in that situation. Okay, last one. I'm going to take one more. If the borrower pays the loan officer comp, will they be able to receive a credit, formerly YSP, from the lender based upon their rate selection? My answer to that would be, once again, I'm not a lawyer, and a lot of what Jim's saying is speculation too at this point. But if you're a borrower and you pay the loan officer or let's say broker directly, you should still be able to use YSP to pay for closing costs as long as the YSP doesn't go to pay for the loan officer comp. You know, one is up front, it can't be the back end. So it appears that would be okay. Anyway, I think we've gone about close to 15 minutes over. I got through as many of these as we possibly can. I understand there are so many questions here. There are so many issues. I will try to get a list of questions up to Jim of what I feel are really, really good questions that we did not answer, so he can answer some of them. And I know he had one he wanted to answer himself. So, and I will get them out to you guys. I don't consider this a one-shot deal. We'll follow up with further information. If you feel we didn't touch your question, we left it completely out there, go ahead and email it to me. Note that my email address is on the slide that's out there at the very bottom, success@originationpro.com, or it could be success@hirschmangroup.com. Email it to me. I'll try to get it to Jim. I can't tell you how many he will answer. Remember, he does this for a living, but I'll do the best I can. I appreciate everybody's time. I'm going to stop the recording, and I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. I will open up the lines.